I'm Roseanne Ariel, and I'm here with Marlene Hauff interviewing Mrs. Charlotte Cohen for the Oral History Project of NCJW. Today is June
14th.
Flag Day. 1988.
Flag Day, right.
Would you like to tell us your name?
I'm Charlotte Cohen, and my address
is... Maybe your address.
4601 Fifth Avenue, apartment 424. Pittsburgh 15213.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay, why don't I go ahead and ask you? We had asked you some questions that we had gotten after with our last interview. The first one is how do you spell Heightstown?
Heightstown.
Okay, and also the names of your parents. We didn't get that.
My father was Barnett, B A R N E T T.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother was Hinda,
Hinda,
H-I-N-D-E or H-I-N-D-A.
Okay. And your birth date?
September 5th, 1915.
Okay. Let's see. The other thing is, where and when was the wheat mill? That was confusing.
All right, it wasn't a wheat mill. It was a feed grain mill. And it was, as I told you, during the war... We believe it was in Passaic. And the reason behind the need for my father and his expertise
mm-hmm.
is they were raising chickens for a long time. New Jersey was a very large chicken growing area. And the need for feed grain was enormous, and everybody else was busy with a lot of other things. So my husband told me this. I didn't realize that my dad had talked to him at some length about what he was doing. But my father simply, there was a mill, and he improvised and adapted for what was needed and then ran it. And my sister wasn't sure whether it was Patterson or Passaic, mm-hmm. but my husband was reasonably sure that it was Passaic.
Okay.
And... he, too, was very proud of my dad.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing that I don't think I told you about, Papa, was among the things that he did was small contracting. Again, he was very good with his hands and with creating, making plans, you know, developing ways and means of doing whatever it is you wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And so he managed to make a living for us. I think I said that I wasn't aware that we were poor, and I meant that. It wasn't that I was shielded or sheltered, because I can remember being not being very happy, because I apparently had a very rich cousin that I had never met. This was one of my father's half-sisters, and she was older than I, but maybe by a couple of years. So her clothes came to me, and I hated them. They were beautiful and, you know, much better than anything that my mother could get for me or my dad could get for me. But that didn't change the fact. I wore it, because the alternate to that was to throw a tantrum, and I didn't do that very much. Sometimes, but not very often. So obviously, in a part of me, I was aware
mm-hmm.
that there was a, you know, problem, and I was aware that carfare even was very tight. And as I was growing, I think I mentioned once or twice that we walked to downtown when I went to school. I walked because there just wasn't any money for carfare. There wasn't any money for lunch. You know,
mm-hmm.
I used to, if I had a nickel, I bought a Mr. Goodbar. You probably don't remember Mr. Goodbar.
Nope.
Well, Mr. Goodbar was a chocolate bar, like that.
Oh, a Hershey's
peanut
bar.
With peanuts.
Yes, right.
Only he was Mr. Goodbar, that's what he was called.
Yeah.
That made a wonderful lunch. So it you know, it isn't that it passed me by. It's just that I had no feeling of being poor. I just never did feel poor. And when Paul and I were married, on, $1,620 a year. And I still didn't feel poor.
Mm-hmm.
And I never have, and I never will, I hope.
Let me go back to asking the rest of the questions. Okay?
Sure.
One was, you had mentioned something unusual about the Social Security, the way that worked at the mill. Could you go into that a little bit more?
No, that wasn't unusual. It was just that I personally was very proud of my father at his age. And Papa, let's see, Papa was 93 when he died. He died in 64. No, in 66. He was 93. So in 41, he was no youngster. And yet, he went to work and developed his own Social Security account. This is what I was saying.
Oh, okay.
So that when he retired, despite the fact that this man, during his lifetime in America, certainly did not have the he simply never made enough money to put money by for his retirement. The fact remains that there he was with having had the gumption to get out there and develop his own retirement. So that he had, so it wasn't until he was almost 90 before the rest of us needed to help.
I see. So he wasn't a burden on his children.
That's the point that I'm making. And it was not that there was something strange about Social Security. Once Social Security came in, it was extremely novel. Of course, today it sounds incredible that I'm saying that it was novel, but it was a very forward-thinking idea and a tremendous step forward socially. But for a man who was, you know, already up in years, to go to work and to register and to get his Social Security number and to pay attention to it, so that when there was no longer a job for him, and that was in his 80s, there he had some money coming in.
Okay, now it makes
sense. Yeah, that's what I was trying to say, and obviously I didn't bring it out as
I should have. That's fine. Okay, let me go on. The other question, you've mentioned your grandfather several times.
Yeah.
Now, did he come with your family from Europe?
He came before, well before.
Okay. He came by himself beforehand?
Oh, dear. Excuse me.
Okay.
That's what I was afraid of.
It's all right. This is all right.
So your grandfather came.
My grandfather
earlier.
Apparently came considerably earlier, right?
And he brought the family over?
No, I'm not exact. I think my father's sisters came with their families. No, Papa was the oldest, but everybody was grown except for one brother that Papa and Mama did bring over here. That was the youngest brother, Uncle Jeff. Who had lost his leg in a mill.
Mm-hmm.
He'd gotten into something or other, so he had a wooden leg. But, and they did, he was younger, and they did bring him, apparently. By the time they brought him, by the way, he was a young man, you know, so that he was more or less on his own as soon as he got here. But no, the family was here. and Papa had three sisters, and a brother, and it was, and the whole family was up in between Otis and Lee, Massachusetts, in the Berkshires. They had a farm there, and apparently everybody was living together. So I would suspect that at that point they had not been here very long. I'm ashamed to say that I know very little of that part of the family. Beyond the fact that they were here and that Grandpa was here.
Did he live with your grandfather? Or he lived separately?
At that time,
they
lived together. That was well before my time.
And when you were living in New York and New Jersey, did he move in with you? Or he never did?
Well, the period that we lived in New Jersey up until I was born, I don't believe so, because he married again and lost the second wife, and then he married by the time I became aware of my granddad. He was married a third time, and she was ill, so I never really met her. But no, he never made his home with us.
Mm-hmm.
That He must have made his home with the family, mm-hmm. but he didn't make his home in my lifetime. What I told you is, you know, my family apparently came to the farm, the Rod farm, which is incidentally no longer in the Rod hands, but in the hands of the widow of one of my cousins, the eldest cousin, the eldest son of my Uncle Jake, who was in the farm. But she maintains it, and the barn apparently has been there, well, since the 1900s, and still she still maintains the name so that you can read it. And at this point, when you come down the Massachusetts Turnpike toward Albany, there is ROD. That's the original farm. The idea was for my father and mother and family, they were the three kids, to settle there and, you know, add their money and improve the place and make a home there. Mm-hmm. And incidentally, they did help his oldest sister to buy a farm, the next sister, you know, but it was a very uncomfortable situation, apparently. And this is strictly hearsay because I wasn't even thought of. It was apparently a very uncomfortable situation for my mother. And she took it just so long, and then simply left with nothing very much more than what they could carry. Mm-hmm. And by the time, as I said, by the time I came along, they were obviously making a living, but on a very different level. Mm-hmm. But as far as, again, as far as I was concerned, it was perfectly all right. You know.
Okay, let me ask you, how do you know how to spell Innsdale?
Hinsdale, H-I-N-S-D-A-L-E, not I-N-S,
H. And what about Pessel?
The name of your friends, Leonard and
Lucy, P-A-S-S-E-L-L.
Okay. We also didn't have your daughter-in-law's name.
Oh, she's Arlene. We call her Lynn, but it's Arlene, A-R-L-Y-N-N-E.
Okay.
Arlene Carol Cohen.
And
the one, as I was thinking about what I had said, the one thing that I think I left with you is the impression that I didn't think there was too much difference between growing up today and growing up in my time, and I didn't mean to leave that impression at all. The pressures, certainly there were pressures then, but they were different in the sense that you had, you frequently had a set of friends very like yourself who were not, wouldn't sway, saw no point in the drinking particularly, no point in the free sex which was, or open sex which existed then as it does today, but on a very different level. Mm-hmm. Today, so that if you joined a group of that nature, you were you were kicking over the traces, so to speak. There were lots of people you could go with and play with and do with. Today, if you stand out against whatever your peers are doing, that's exactly what you're doing, and you have to search to find, you know, your counterparts. And the pressures have got to be much, much greater. And certainly on the parents who have to, I would suspect that you've had some of this, mm-hmm. you yourself. Mm-hmm. The parents, you know, walk a very thin line between too strong a hand, in which case you push your kid over, and not enough mm-hmm. caring, in which case you push your kid over because he says, who cares? And this is terrible. So that... I don't know whether I left you with that impression, but I didn't mean to. Mm-hmm. That's not to say that I'm, you know, that they weren't there then. Mm-hmm. They were.
It's just different. It is entirely different. It's more
complicated. It was just far more complicated today. Mm-hmm. And kids are much freer today, and a good part of that is good. Mm-hmm. the very language that we speak today is different from what we spoke mm-hmm. when I was growing up. You weren't free. You didn't talk about sex. Mm-hmm. Today, the airwaves talk about sex. Mm-hmm. It makes a tremendous difference that I had friends, or I had acquaintances, I should say, who had roommates of the opposite sex and chose to live with them or not to live with them or to do whatever they chose. Sure, I knew people like that, and, you know, and it wasn't that I shunned them, but that was not my way. Today, if a 22-year-old stays home, she's the one who's looked at. If a 22-year-old boy stays home, wow. When I was growing up, if you chose to get an apartment, so you were very daring, but you got it with a couple of girls. Today you get it with a couple of girls. You've got a different picture. Mm-hmm. So that there is no question.
I think you made that pretty clear.
Okay, so now we go forward.
Okay, why don't we pick up where we left at the end of the last tape, and the last thing you said...
I remember.
Well, the last thing you said was that you got married.
Oh, yes, I did indeed.
That was the very last thing.
And you came to Pittsburgh.
Right, and you came to Pittsburgh. Why don't you pick up from there and tell us what it was like moving to Pittsburgh, where you lived, what kinds of things you did.
Well, it was quite a change. I had really never been out of the environs, so it was quite something, moving away from the family. I told you I'm the youngest of six. And coming to a strange place where I knew no one but my new husband. And
where did you live?
Well, we began our married life in his rented room on Darlington Road. And he had a roommate who was traveling at that point. So we had, I had 2 weeks in which to find a place to live. And that was in the fall of 1937. Mm-hmm. And my job then was to get the paper and go looking for an apartment. And obviously, we didn't have furniture, and we really had very little with us. So it had to be a furnished apartment. Now remember, I knew absolutely nothing about Pittsburgh. So I'm not going to bore you, but I'll just tell you that I had some very strange experiences. Because I did mention that we got married on a very small salary. Of course, now that sounds incredible. You know, today, $1,620 is not even a month's mm-hmm. wage. But it was possible, if you were very careful. Okay. And he didn't stay at that level. You know, but you moved at very small increments. Nonetheless, the first thing to do was to get an apartment, a place to live so that we could move out so Irv could go back to his room. Well, not knowing the city and not knowing the various neighborhoods, I simply went. And I found myself in some very strange houses. And they took a look at me and said, "You don't want to see the rooms."
Oh, really?
And I didn't I told you that I trained as a nurse, and I'm a registered nurse, and I didn't understand that. The first time I just felt, you know, as though they were refusing me. The second time I thought, "Gee, you know, what's wrong with me?" The third time I caught on. So then when I would approach a house and, you know, find somebody to ask if they would show me the rooms, because it wasn't an apartment, you know, mm-hmm. it was two rooms and bath that I was looking for. If I got a queer glance, regardless of what they said about it, it was too much money, mm-hmm. it was too high up, I learned. But that was a very queer business.
Oh, sure.
And it took several days before, because you didn't run into it, you know, every
right.
time.
Where did you finally end up living?
On Parkview Avenue, just one, I don't know, do you know
Church? I know exactly where this is.
You know exactly where
it is. My husband's office is on Juliet Street. So that's about two blocks up, it's right as you go down the boulevard of the alley.
What did your
My husband's a veterinarian.
Oh, good. Yeah. Okay. Well, Parkview
Avenue. The old Chinese restaurant was?
No, that's up above. Yeah. But this is the last block before the ravine through which the railroad runs. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Where Sestilly's is now, called the nursery.
I don't know. At that time.
Yeah. Swinburne Bridge.
Below.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
Way down.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, there was one.
Oakland.
That's Oakland, all right. There was one house at the very end of that, and we were in the second house. And on the third floor, they had two rooms at back. And that's what I finally found.
That's
and that's where.
It was a nice neighborhood then. Still is, actually.
Well, yeah, it was very, very, very modest in price so that we could well afford it. And, well, I shouldn't say well afford it. We could afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, they allowed us to make it even a little more private in the sense that they permitted us to put up, my husband and I did it, we put up a partition at the top of the steps so that we had a door that we opened and closed. You know. And as I say, we did indeed have two rooms and bath, and it was indeed furnished, but I wouldn't... I wouldn't call it furnished as you would expect it to be furnished today. For instance, it had an iron bedstead, and it did have some wicker furniture, so that it was a bed sitting room.
Uh-huh.
Well, we had friends in, actually. They sat on the bed. Down it went.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding. Down it went. So we tied it back up. So we had a bed that was tied up, but it was fun. It truly was fun, and it was heated by these little gas stoves, and something I had never seen before. That's not to say that we always lived in
places. Yeah, but I think that is.
But it was a different kind of grate, you know.
How long did you live there?
We lived there. I guess it took us about 6 or 7 months before we found a place on Oakland Avenue.
Mm-hmm.
And we moved to that, and there we furnished. It was a little place, but it was a little dollhouse.
That was an apartment?
No, nobody at that point thought, oh, who had money for a house to buy a house? That's another major difference.
Mm-hmm. So you were
and
home
you have,
then, is that right?
I was home. When we came to Pittsburgh, we talked about my going to work, and Paul was doing shifts at the time. He worked for the Bureau of Mines.
Mm-hmm. That's why you settled in Oakland.
That's why we settled in Oakland, because he could walk.
Yeah.
And he was also contemplating, and he ultimately did go back to school. But because of his shift work and my going to work, would have complicated our lives. So he said, well, let's see if we can do it without your going to work. I ultimately did go to work simply because as we made friends and people needed help, nursing help of one kind of another, of course, I was available. So we found that I was really much busier than I would have been if I'd been working as a paid nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And when that happened, and I was working long hours because these were friends, these were mothers of friends, fathers of friends, you know, people who were in trouble, who didn't have the money to get help. And it's simply not possible to say no. At least it wasn't for me. Well, at that point, when I had done, you know, 12-hour duty with the mother of a friend of ours for some 3.5 weeks as she was dying. When that was over, and it was very draining, because in addition to doing what had to be done, you were bleeding for your friends.
Mm-hmm.
So this gets pretty bad. Well, at any rate, when that was over, Paul said, look, if you're going to work, let's us decide which days you work. you know, which shifts your work. So then I did work, and I did work until I became pregnant.
How long was that?
Well, we were married in 1937, in the fall of 37, and Howard was born the end of October in 41.
Oh, so 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
So did you work at a job in a hospital?
No, I didn't. I deliberately didn't do that. I did private duty.
And how did you get the clients? Did they call you?
Oh,
did
the
you
hospitals.
No.
At that time, well, you still do, as an RN, you register with the agents, with your nursing associations.
Mm-hmm. Registry.
Mm-hmm. In addition, once the hospital got to know you, if they chose to know you, they themselves would call you.
Mm-hmm.
So then I was kept really very busy, as busier than I wanted to be.
Were you still in this apartment when your son was born?
Yes, mm-hmm. Yes. He was born from
Oklahoma.
When
was he born?
And then October 24th, 1941.
Mm-hmm.
And then it gets sticky because the next quite a few years of my life was spent simply staying alive, and I really don't want to go into that because I'd gotten very, very ill. And
after he was born?
No, it was... it was a toxic pregnancy, I will say this. It was a toxic pregnancy, mm-hmm. And when I went into labor, it was mixed. It was a missed labor, so to speak, because there was a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept saying that I wasn't in labor, and of course I was. And then they did an emergency cesarean and messed me up, but good. And messed my kidneys up particularly. And we never meant to have just one child. We meant to have a family. We are very grateful that we have one child. And really it's a miracle that he's with us, and he is, and he's a lawyer, as I told you, and he's fine, and he is a family. But it took a lot of years to recover. And as a matter of fact, the residual is still with me. You did say that this was not for publication.
Oh, no.
I'm in a brace, a much smaller body brace, a much smaller brace than I had when I first began getting up again, standing up again. Of course, it took several years to lay me flat, and it did. And I went down to about 70 pounds. It was a...
My goodness.
And one of two things happens when that happens to... A couple, a house, a family, but mostly a couple. You either become totally bonded,
mm-hmm.
and you stay alive no matter what because you've got another half of you, or you split.
Right, I would agree. Tragedy, and it brings you together.
As you know, we are bonded.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to sort of skip over a lot of time because it's really a very nasty and gory mess.
No, but that's a big part of you and what made you what you are.
It's what made me what I am.
Right.
That's exactly right. It's one of the reasons why I didn't go back to nursing.
Mm-hmm. What happened? Who was raising your child?
Me.
You were so ill. You were able to take care of him?
To begin with, one of the things, of course, he didn't come out of this with no problems. They thought he was dead. They thought I was dying.
Oh.
They cut his cord too short. So when he was 7 months old, he had, do you know what an intussusception is? He had a hernia, but that was the small thing. The bowel slides inside itself and
mm-hmm.
shuts off.
So what happens at that point?
Well, at that point, we needed surgery. Fortunately, he unblocked himself, but it was all part of the hernia because his navel didn't, they cut him so short that the navel didn't do what it normally does, which is scab, scar, and
right.
invert, and
right.
then you have a perfectly normal, he still doesn't, can't, because he had to have surgery.
Mm-hmm.
So he didn't come off scot-free, and he was shy of oxygen. It was just a, nonetheless.
Tough time.
When they thought, you know, that there wasn't much point to, I will tell you this, they thought, I really shouldn't even talk about it, because even today it upsets me. Not me, but what happened to him. They thought that there wasn't, you know, that there really wasn't a viable child, so they weren't paying very much attention to him.
This is in the hospital.
This is in the hospital. One of your hospitals. They were paying attention to me, however.
Mm-hmm.
And there were private nurses on me, you know, because I was desperately ill. And that was the beginning of the requirement for obstetricians to answer for maternal death.
Mm-hmm.
Either.
Is that called wrongful death?
Well,
today?
Maternal death. You had to explain it.
Uh-huh. At the
time. At the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you lost the mother during labor, that was one pretty bad bit.